This is the PC Gamer Podcast, episode 127 for April 3rd, 2008. Should I do that again?
No.
Hi, everybody. This is your host, Dan Stapleton, and with me today are our senior editor, Logan Decker.
Good afternoon.
Our senior executive intern, Norm Chan.
Hello.
Our, let's say, senior podcast producer, Andy Bauman.
Glad to be senior.
Enjoy your promotion.
It comes to
nothing. So it's just us today because Kristen and Chuck are off playing Age of Conan for our next cover story after the one we will talk about in a second. They flew all the way to where'd they go? Sweden or?
I believe Oslo.
Oslo, yes, that's right.
Where so, it's very cold.
Yes. And so they are out of the office all this week. We will just move right on to talking about our next cover story, which is about to hit. THQ announced today that Warhammer 40,000 Dawn of War 2 is in development, and we have it on our cover, which is going to be on shelves April 29th, but subscribers, you lucky bastards, you'll be getting it sooner. I guess after next week, the subscribers should start to see it in their mailboxes, depending on how nice they've been to their mailman. So I got to go up to Relic to see that game, which it really looks amazing. Those guys are some of my favorite developers. They between Homeworld and Company of Heroes, they make some outstanding RTSs. And this is coming from a guy who's not really that into the Warhammer universe to begin with. I mean, I kind of like it, but some of the goofiness of some of the comic relief doesn't really work for me. But the gore that I like. Did you guys ever play Dawn of War 1?
Mm-hmm. I didn't. It's fantastic. Looked amazing.
Yeah, and like all the detail in the animation is really great. Mm-hmm. Their finishing moves, like when a unit finally kills another one after standard hacking and slashing away for a while, they'll do some crazy stuff like cutting each other in half, and they had moves they referred to as blood pinatas, where they would knock a guy way up in the air and hit him a bunch, and blood sprays everywhere.
That's a beautiful phrase,
isn't it though? I love the way this looks, and it's also built on the Company of Heroes engine. It's called the Essence engine, which lets you make use of cover and deformable terrain and all kinds of things like that. It's really outstanding. You gotta check out this story. So keep an eye out for that one. And if you buy Dawn of War Soulstorm, the expansion for the first Dawn of War, you can get into the beta for Dawn of War 2, which it's going to be lots of fun.
Okay. Do you know when the beta is?
I do not know when the beta is. I think that's going to be a little bit flexible depending on when it's actually ready to go.
Right.
So, moving on. April Fool's Day was a couple days ago, as you may have noticed. And a few developers did some little fun little things to commemorate the occasion, most notably Blizzard, who they really put some effort
into
these.
They stepped up, yeah.
They put some time into this. Like they took the time to put Tauren Marine soldiers into StarCraft 2 and post some video of that, which is pretty funny. I mean, they big like cow-headed people in Marine running around, and they made them like super units, so they just like mowed through everything. Like they were attacking a base and just killing everything right and left in like two shots. It's pretty funny. And then they also had the Bard class for World of Warcraft, which you sit around like they had a undead guy with a like big sword looking guitar.
At first glance, I actually thought that was a true story. I was like, oh, Bards, sweet. I didn't really read the story. And
Yeah, you can never trust anything you see on the internet on April 1st.
Yes, but then I realized
it is a terrible time.
It was April 1st.
Yeah, they may as well just turn off the internet for a day because it's entirely worthless. There was a story about how Microsoft had bought Yahoo. There was, you know, all kinds of stuff that
Google had their annual thing. And actually, I thought this year's was kind of lackluster. It was like the time traveling email story, which I thought was kind of meh.
I mean, it was okay. I thought it was funny, and just the idea that they would actually let you do that and mess with people, you know. I appreciated that joke, but
other game developers had some April Fool's stories too, right? I think 3D Realms put up some more concept art or screenshots from Duke Nukem Forever when it was just like not
crayon.
Yeah, it was scribbly, you know, chicken scratch,
right? And Ironclad, the guys that did Sins of Solar Empire, had another race revealed, and it was the Care Bears. things like that. There are a lot of good things like, and you know, I like that kind of April Fool's joke where it's obviously a joke, the kind where, you know, like the Microsoft buys Yahoo thing, mm-hmm. that's too believable, and you know, it's intended to mislead you, mm-hmm. So it makes it, and especially when you're mixing that in with actual news items, that takes some of the fun out of it, because you know, you. It effectively destroys the internet as a means of conveying useful information.
I think that they shouldn't have April Fools on April 1st because everyone knows it's coming. So it should be like there should be some government office that decides what day it's going to be, and then you have to register and you have to find out what date it is.
Well, they don't tell you. They tell select people.
Yeah, yeah, you know.
And then on the day of, then they'll announce, aha, it is the Fool's Day.
Yeah, exactly. So you have to, maybe they do it by lottery like they do with citizenship. You know, and you get to know what, you know, if you're a lottery winner, you get to know what the real date is.
And those people are granted legal immunity.
Exactly. And you can do, you know, you can just bust out and do whatever you want, do some crazy stuff. And then the government will say, yeah, it was in fact April Fool's in July, you know, and that just keeps it fresh, you know, rather than it's obligatory, you know, the kind of thing.
Right.
And at the same time, as you observed, shield people from lawsuits and litigation.
They should also mandate no more Rickrolling.
Yeah, but Gary Wood has sent me like the ultimate Rickroll the other day. It was this really nasty one that plays the video and it resizes your browser window and bounces it around the screen so you can't get to it, and then to close it. And then when you try and close it, it pops up with a pop-up for like every line of lyrics, so you have to click through every lyric of the song to close it.
Wow, that is the ultimate Rickroll.
It is nasty.
That's savage.
Yeah, so you've heard at least a quarter of the song by the time you can close out of it.
I can't wait for Rickrolling to be in games. I mean, that's got to pop up somewhere.
I think Rickrolling should remain as long as people are gullible enough to keep clicking on video links. I mean, that's just part of, you know, it'll become part of the natural ecology of using computers.
Yeah.
It's now just barely jumped out of the elite underground internet.
Yeah, it's like if you're walking around, you know, around town and you're not looking at the sidewalk, you'll eventually step in dog poo. You know, you have to keep on your toes. You have to be aware.
Well, you know, the most viewed Rickroll on YouTube had like 5.5 million views.
Oh, my gosh.
Nice.
That's a lot of victims. Anyway. So Ubisoft a couple days ago announced that they're going to load 40 of their games onto Steam, including Assassin's Creed.
Only in North America, though, which is weird.
That's right. It's the licensing deal that they have with Steam only is for North America, which kind of sucks for Europeans using Steam. I guess Steam is localized, so it knows what region you're from.
Well, it can tell based on your IP.
Right.
Yeah.
But 40 titles is a lot. I mean, Assassin's Creed, you can already pre-order it. I think Rainbow Six Vegas 2 you can pre-order. And then a bunch of other old games like Far Cry.
And Splinter Cell as well.
Yeah.
Yes. Splinter Cell and Far Cry you can get on there right now. And, you know, we always like to see those catalogs expand.
Awesome.
Huge expansion.
I think that'll help Rainbow Six Vegas 2's multiplayer a lot, too, by using Steam. Are they going to allow Steam?
Well, I don't think that it's going to use Steam as the multiplayer. I mean, typically when you get these games on there that are third party, they don't use like the Half-Life style multiplayer interface. They use their own thing. And Steam is
You can use the overlay.
Can you still right click join game, that kind of thing?
I don't think so.
Oh, poopy.
We shall see.
Yeah. But you'll be able to know when your friends are playing, you know, Rainbow Six Vegas 2. Which digital distribution method did Ubisoft use before they adopted Steam?
You can just download it from their website, or they use D2D, Direct-to-Drive.
Oh, right.
Okay, yeah, I never really liked Direct-to-Drive. Steam was just so much easier.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, these deals that they're doing now are not mutually exclusive. You know, they can put their games, any publisher can put their games on Steam and still put them somewhere else.
Like Telltale does that.
Right. And like there's another service like Steam starting up called Impulse that Stardock is doing. We just had a meeting with them a few minutes ago, where they were showing off what they're planning to do, and it's a pretty ambitious Steam style service where it has all the games on there. It's an easy purchasing thing, and one of the major selling points that they have over Steam is that it does not have to check in every time that you want to run a game. It has a one-time activation when you install the game, and then you're good to go. You don't have to log in anymore.
And that's for everybody who wrote in to us with the same subject line.
Steamed about Steam.
Well, now you have another place to go to buy your games. It wouldn't surprise me at all. I think he suggested this morning, didn't he, Dan, that they will also carry a lot of titles that you find on Steam.
Right.
Yeah. I can't believe I said that. Games.
We were talking to Brad Wardell, the CEO of Stardock, and he was saying that they do plan to have a comparable list of titles to Steam, and that a lot of publishers have signed on with Impulse just to give... basically to keep Steam on their toes. You know, they don't want Steam to get complacent and, you know, being monopolistic about it. They want to have multiple places you can go to download games. And, you know, Steam is pretty dominant right now. They have, what, 15 million registered users?
Yeah.
Yeah. So
they have kind of a stranglehold on it. And that's not really good for anybody, really. It's not good for consumers. No. It's good for Valve and, you know, good for them. But for us, we have
another entrant, which was Penny Arcade made the announcement for Greenhouse.
It's not really Penny Arcade that's doing it. It's Hothead that is doing the Penny Arcade game.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah. Okay.
Right. So and this one is more of an indie focused one.
Mm-hmm.
So all the little indie games you see popping up, you'll be able to check those out on Greenhouse. And Greenhouse, if you go to playgreenhouse.com, now there's a beta up with that. So that's worth
checking. I think the more download services, the better. It's not like music to me, where I want to be able to play my music on. Play it on my iPod. Play it in my car. Play it at home. You know, I got to be able to take it everywhere. Whereas when I'm at my computer, I don't care how many, where I'm getting these games from or who I'm downloading them from. I'll use four or five services. It doesn't matter to me. I wouldn't do that with music, where, you know, I don't want to go to iTunes and, you know, BMG's service and Sony's lame service, each one with their different DRM
Each of these have their own different DRMs, right?
Yeah, but I can use it on the same computer. I'm not, you know, using...
I mean, yeah, that's the big difference, of course.
Exactly. So I don't really care that I'm using different services. I think the more, the merrier. Obviously, I don't feel the same way about music.
Right, and one thing that's great about having multiple services is that, you know, some of them, they'll have, you know, deals. Like Steam has their you know, sometimes they'll have a sale. Like Prey this last weekend was $5, which, you know, if you missed that, you know, I'm sorry, but, you know, that's a great deal.
But it's, you know, it's still worth $30 to me.
Yeah, it's a very good game. We gave it Action Game of the Year for 2 years ago, and, you know, it was a lot of fun. But you know, it'll keep them competing with each other, which is great. The one thing I don't really like, though, about having multiple services is you know, it's not all in one place, and it's hard to I like to keep Steam running in the background.
Yep, yeah. I don't want to run four different applications or front ends. I mean, I think it's great if a service is just a download service, so you have to, you know, turn it on and then you download the app. But if it's something that you have to have running, you know, when you want to run the game or preload something, that could be annoying.
That's what made Impulse so attractive.
Yeah, Impulse does not do that, which is a nice selling point. Also, they have some creative ways to provide DRM without screwing over the end user. And you know that the Stardock has very adamantly against messing with the end user's experience. They don't want to inconvenience you with DRM because they recognize that the people that actually bought the game are not the people that are going to steal it. So they've got some pretty creative stuff in there that it shouldn't mess with your experience, but lets you play the game, just as you would without any DRM in place.
Wouldn't it be just as good to have stuff such as Telltale where it's just off their website? I mean, what's with all the services? Can't you just go to a website and download? That would be sweet.
Yeah, but I mean, it is nice to have one place you can go to download anything you want. I mean, this doesn't preclude people from doing that, and I'm sure that a lot of people certainly will do that. Anybody like Telltale can host their own game, but this just lets them put it in front of more people.
Like Dan said, I'm a total cheapskate. I will scour every service for deals, every weekend.
Oh, yeah, that's cool. That's definitely
good. Because they're competing, They want you, hey, come over here. We'll give you this. We'll give you 3 games for, $20, stuff like that. Booyah.
Another thing that Impulse wants to do that Steam is not doing is to host a bunch of, computer utilities on there. Stardock does a lot of utilities. Like, they do the window blinds, window skinning software, and some other things like that.
I believe you mentioned third-party applications as well, which is
right,
fantastic.
So they're going to host... They're going to host a lot of that stuff, so it'll be a nice place to go for that kind of software if you're into that kind of thing.
Yeah, very cool.
And also, you don't have to buy a giant box that's shrink wrapped for your antivirus stuff. It doesn't make sense, it's wasteful.
Right. So moving right along, Epic is hosting another Make Something Unreal contest, and I love when they do this. They're giving away $1 million, I guess, Epic and Unreal. Intel.
Yeah, previous years, I think NVIDIA was a sponsor. This year, Intel's a sponsor. It's more hardware focused. But it's $1 million.
Yeah, $1 million worth of prizes they're giving away.
That's
a huge prize right there. How much does an Unreal Engine license cost? It's generally in millions of dollars, isn't it?
Well, it used to be $100,000, I think, for engine license. But that was old days, and I think they're more expensive now. So definitely not pocket change.
Right. And what that would allow a mod team to do is release their mod as a full game.
That's right.
And I really love when they do this kind of thing because it promotes a bunch of great mods being made. It's also, people keep asking us, what's the best way to get your foot in the door of the games industry? And this is a great way to do that. If you mm-hmm. can make a mod and show off what you can do, it gets a lot of attention because... this will showcase all these great mods that are made for this. People will download them, try them out, even if it doesn't win. You get a bunch of exposure. So this is a great way to go about that.
Was Red Orchestra started off a Make Something Unreal contest?
I don't think it started there, but I think it won. It won it. I mean, I think it was something else in development when they announced the first one.
Right. I think they did win it. Actually.
Yeah, they did. They win. Yeah. They won the first annual one.
Yeah, and they won. They won a license, which allowed them to distribute their game as a full game.
The game was sold at retail. What's interesting also is that it's Unreal 3, right? So Unreal Tournament 3. So.
Right.
It'll drive sales of the game. Plus, whatever mod comes out might also work on the PS3. Which might encourage more people to enter the contest.
Right. So speaking of Intel and what they're up to, we had an Intel rep saying that you might not even need a graphics card in the future because their CPUs are getting so powerful.
Bah.
is there anything to that, Logan?
That is the biggest load of baloney I've heard in months. It makes for a great, press release, but... Come on, I remember when Bill Gates said, 640K, who needs more memory than that? I think we're going to need graphics accelerators for a long time to come. I mean, multi-core processors are fast, but, come on, they're not able to do the specialized tasks that GPUs have been doing for years.
So an 8-core CPU, even if you'd voted like 4 cores of that strictly to GPU functions, they couldn't keep up with a 9800?
I think it'll be a while before they've got that kind of architecture.
Right, because that's something you designed specifically to do one task is going to be better at that than 4 processors that are designed to do any task.
And GPUs have a lot of them have more transistors than CPUs.
Right.
So I think when I say a long time, I'm thinking, before it even becomes conceivable to me, 4 or 5 years.
Right.
Which is a long, long time in technology. And by then, we'll all be playing games in our heads, Matrix style and all that.
Intel was saying that they were going to have like 80 core processors in the next few years, weren't they?
Yeah. Well, they did. They did actually make, to their credit, an 80 core processor.
Like
to show 80, off to everybody.
80 cores in under one die?
Yeah.
That's a little ridiculous.
And but Peggle was going at, 250 frames per second? It was nice.
one thing that they were showing off in this video that went along with the story was physics processing,
mm-hmm.
which I mean multi-core processors would be very good at that, because GPUs I guess are not as well suited for physics because they were designed for graphics.
Yeah, I believe it's CPUs that are better at floating point math, and so again there are some tasks that are easier on a CPU than they are on a GPU.
Yeah, but the moral of the story is do not throw away your GeForce card just yet.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm putting it back in now.
Unless it's AGP.
So also in the future is Alone in the Dark, which I guess it's now coming out in June. They've been kind of wishy-washy on a release date on that one, but they're now saying June.
I have to admit that they have always said, 2008. I think that they've never really pinned themselves to a specific date.
I am super excited for that game.
Really?
Not just because of the pedigree, and I love the old and original Alone in the Dark series games. I know this one's completely different. It's not in like the Haunted Mansion style, but the technology demos I've seen coming out of the game look amazing. The stuff they're doing with the lighting and the deformable environments and using, stuff in your environment to fight the monsters. I can't wait for that to come out.
Survival horror is my favorite genre, which makes me very, very nervous about this, because I agree with you. I've seen the tech demos. They're unbelievably beautiful. And all I can think is, how is this really going to work? Is this going to play as great as it looks? It's hard to believe.
It's also being developed for consoles too. So I assume it's got to be player friendly.
Yeah. Well,
I just remember that the one demo I saw of it at E3 a couple years ago, where you're walking through a basement or something like that, and there were steam pipes going off everywhere, and I guess you had just been clubbed over the head or something, and you just woken up, and your vision would blur after a little while, and you would actually have to push a button to blink, to clear your vision. Which was actually kind of cool. I mean, the blurring vision effect was kind of cool, and you blink and your vision goes away for a second, so something could jump out at you during that moment of vulnerability. So you kind of had to weigh whether to blink now or blink later, and your vision gets blurrier all the time. So it might be cool.
But, I remember they were talking about things you can do anything. If you're facing a monster and you've got gasoline, you can set something on fire and throw it at the monster or break up a chair and use it as a club. We've heard a lot of those claims before. I think it'll probably be great, but I'm a little nervous.
Yeah. Oh, we'll have to wait and see on that one.
Yeah.
Because they haven't let us play it yet.
No, which is part of the nervous thing.
Do you think that you'll have to know anything about the series in order to pick it up at that game?
I doubt it.
I don't think so. I think
it sounds like a reimagining kind of.
Yeah, and the fact that they're just calling it simply Alone in the Dark, no subtitle or anything, is it's kind of a reboot of the series, I guess. Much like J.J. Abrams' Star Trek, simply titled Star Trek. So you won't be able to play Madden 09 on the PC, EA has said.
Peter Moore has said.
Oh. I don't know who here is really disappointed about that.
No, I just think it's
No, I actually think there are a bunch of people. I mean, obviously not all of us are big sports fans on PC. I think, you know, vast majority of people who have been playing sports games on PC, you know, now probably have a console because it's easier with, it's one of those few genres that's easier to play with the gamepad. You know, with the racing, I mean, I guess racing games and flight sims, or I guess racing games at least on PC still make sense, but like football, I really couldn't see myself playing that on a PC anyway.
I'm as rabid a PC gamer as you're going to find. Playing a sports game on a mouse and keyboard is not as much fun as playing it on a gamepad. And there are certain games that are just better suited for it. And at least the way those controls are designed. If somebody wanted to come along and design a game specifically for the mouse and keyboard, maybe that would be more fun on the PC, but not Madden. And you know, it's always sad to see, you know, fewer games on the PC, I guess, but Madden.
I'd rather they not put it on the PC than put out a crappy PC port or a crappy, simultaneous develop game with the same name. And what Peter Moore said in his interview wasn't that they're abandoning the PC for sports games. They have ideas and different plans, but they think the PC gamers are definitely a different market. You know, the sports games that really thrive on the PC are the management games, the spreadsheet type games, and maybe EA could go that route and integrate more, you know, graphics and those.
Well, they did put out like a football manager sim a while back, didn't they?
EA? I'm not sure if it was EA.
Yeah, EA puts out a new one every year.
Okay. Yeah.
So we'll still have that, and you know, honestly, if you want to play football, you know, that's a console game.
If you want to play football, go outside and play football.
Yeah. All right. I'll buy that.
I don't know. And it seems like EA is in bed with the console makers. They're like, well, we'll get those PC gamers to buy consoles, so we'll make crappy PC ports of all our sports games.
I don't think that's the thinking.
No,
I think it's
But I love sports games on the PC. I mean, with a gamepad, of course, but
what sports games do you play, Andy?
I played the hell out of the newest Winning 11, the latest couple, and I used to play NHL before it started sucking too much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so no great loss.
I know, it just makes me have to get a console, which is terrible.
Don't do it. Fight it.
I know.
Let's move on to some listener questions.
Hello, this is Daniel from Los Angeles, California. I'm recording this on a laptop with a 1.1 gigahertz processor and integrated graphics, a 1024 by 600 pixel display, and no onboard optical drive. I was wondering if you had recommendations for games that will play on a lightweight laptop like this that have a bit more substance than the casual PopCap type games. The requirements would be that they will work with a lower power processor and integrated graphics, a lower resolution display. But I think hardest of all, since most of us won't want to carry around the CDs, much less an external optical drive, will work without the CD in the drive or a continuous internet connection, or even an internet connection at all. Any recommendations would be greatly appreciated. Thanks for a great podcast and a great magazine.
Ooh, this is tough. I mean, the problem is back, you know, my first instinct was to say, ooh, great, classic games, you know. But, you know, the days of the classic games, everything came on, you know, floppy disk or a CD, and there's not a lot of downloadable versions.
I mean, there are some, but if you don't have internet access to be able to contact Steam, then kind of screwed. Pretty much all games are going to have some kind of copy protection on them. If you don't have a optical drive or a internet connection, you got nothing.
Yeah, I mean, if you can get an internet connection and download stuff, then you can probably. I know that there are games that have been released as freeware, like Beyond a Steel Sky. If you can get the Scum VM emulator, you can Google that one, or I think it's at scumvm.org.
Not sure what's what website.
Yeah, but you can get the Scum emulator for LucasArts games, and Beneath a Steel Sky is available as a free download now. That's a fantastic point and click.
with integrated games, you're basically relegated to the, you know, 2D adventure games, yeah. Maybe old RTSs. StarCraft will definitely run on that laptop.
Although, I mean, you would need a CD crack.
Right, to not have to play it with the
CD.
Yeah.
Although, okay, so looking through Steam, because with Steam you can do, you know, if you download offline. Them at one point and then set them to offline mode, you can do that. Audio Surf, Def Con, Grand Theft Auto 1 and 2, what else we got? We got a Sudoku game on here. I mean, they got a bunch of, you know, casual games that you probably don't, like, you want more depth than that. Maybe Civilization 3. That might work.
Or Flash games.
Well, he just said he wanted more depth than the, you know, the PopCap style things. I think, you know, there are some options out there. But copy protection is going to be your biggest concern. I think that Steam is your best option in that case, just because you can set it to offline mode, as long as you have a base station where you can plug in and get these games in the first place.
Next question.
Hi, guys. This is Ian Dawson from London, a.k.a. D-Dude on the Steam community. I just wanted to get your opinion on which aspect of the Orange Box you feel was the best, which one it was that you enjoyed the most. At first, I thought it was Portal, because of how brilliantly structured it was, but then I played through Episode 2 and realized that Valve had created an almost perfect portion of Half-Life. And then, I appreciated just what Team Fortress 2 has done for me, of how I still play it almost daily, months after its release. I should also point out that this question becomes even more difficult if you decide to consider that game, which was of course available with the pre-order of the Orange Box, Peggle Extreme. So what do you think?
That's like, this is like Sophie's Choice. You know, pick one of your kids.
Geez. Logan, what's your favorite?
I guess. Oh man.
Logan has failed. Norm, what's your favorite?
I'm not ready to make a decision yet. Dan, what's your favorite?
I think I got to go with Portal. I mean, I love the other parts too. I think that
I'm falling in line.
Yeah, I think Episode 2 was probably the weakest of the three. Not because it was bad, but because the others were so outstanding. And Episode 2, you know, while it has, you know, excellent characters and you know, storyline and everything, that the gameplay was not different. Whereas with the other two, gameplay is different and innovative. So I think I just respected the design of Portal that much, a little bit more, and the humor of Portal was brilliant as well.
I loved Episode 1. Absolutely loved it. And there's a sequence near the end, which if you've played it, you know what I'm talking about, that I thought that was better than anything I've played in the entire series.
You're talking about Episode 1 or Episode 2?
Episode 1.
Okay.
But I gotta agree with Dan. I think Portal is the game that really got me. It was unique. It was something unexpected. And it delivered. I mean, it went way beyond delivering. And it was just a delight from start to finish. Half-Life 2, Episode 1, fantastic game, but it was Portal that I couldn't wait to get home to, you know?
Norm?
I'll go with Portal.
Really?
We have a fence sitter here.
You know, let's push who am I kidding? Who am I kidding? Team Fortress 2.
Yeah.
Right. Who am I effing kidding?
Yeah, that's Norm has spent more time in that game than any in the last.
I have breathing.
Yeah.
Andy?
I think the Orange Box, this guy just had made me realize that it's the single most awesome thing ever, probably. But I gotta go with Portal, straight up.
All right.
That game blew me away. And I love the challenges. Oh my gosh. Amazing. TF2 is amazing. They're all amazing.
Valve, stop being amazing.
Yeah.
Knock it off.
The brevity of Portal makes it even better because it concentrates all that goodness into this, like, just tiny little delivery system that goes right into your pleasure zone.
Oh, yeah.
Or, you know where that is. I mean, it's different for people, but whatever.
I remember when you guys were talking about Portal way back. It was like the learning aspect of it that made it so exciting. And that just keeps going. Even as you're doing the challenges, you're still learning new ways to get through the levels and faster ways and less portal ways. And, oh, it just stops. Oh, blah. It gets
and
to
all
you.
Those aha moments, you know, they just keep coming over and over again. Yeah. And then you have to rely on them just to survive, you know?
The next question is about writing. And so you guys will probably have some good ideas.
Hey, guys. It's Dave from Toronto. Here's the thing. I don't much care for first-person shooter games. I know many people do, there's nothing wrong with that, but I get nauseous, I'm terrible at them, I can't play them. But I do like strong writing in games, and in recent days, the two games which have gotten the biggest rave reviews for their writing are both first-person shooter or non-shooter type games, namely BioShock and Portal. So I guess my question is, will it do me any good to track down a complete video playthrough of these games and just watch it? Or do you think that the nature of the writing in these games, or in games in general, is such that you can't really appreciate it unless you're the one that's doing the hands-on interactivity? So I'd be interested to hear your comments on that.
I think you'd probably be pretty bored sitting there watching.
The writing may be great for these games, but there's so much downtime where it's the action time where if you're not interacting with the game, you're not going to be interested.
The writing is the bread part of the sandwich, and the game is the meat. And just eating the bread by itself isn't going to do.
It's artisan bread, mind you.
And there's some damn tasty bread out there.
If you had somebody to edit it, and cut out all the just going from place to place parts.
Right, what's interesting is it might not work for first person shooters, but. There have been RPGs. There was an Ion Storm RPG. Was it not Deus Ex? Anachronox. It was a Quake 2 engine based RPG where there is a video online of the playthrough, and you can watch it, the whole thing. It's like many, many hours, as almost like a movie.
And, I'm sure that if you Google around a bit, you can find people who have taken the time to go through and like transcribe all the dialogue, maybe, or maybe go on YouTube and look to see if anybody's done a video like that. But first of all, I don't know where you even get a video walkthrough of the entire game. That would be huge.
Somebody has posted. I just saw this last week. A movie of the entire playthrough of Grim Fandango, which I'm told is fantastic. Like even with Manny walking around from place to place, apparently it really works. It's in four parts on YouTube, but I haven't watched the whole thing myself because I've already played it so many times.
But how long does that game take to go through?
This must be a very, very long movie. I'm hoping there is at least some editing in it, but I hear it's great.
But I mean, like both of the games mentioned, Portal and BioShock. I mean, Portal is a short game, and that would be like a 6 hour, 4 to 6 hour, viewing. And really, the story parts of that are like at the beginning and end of each level, mostly. With a few things you'll see like scrawled on a wall in between. So. Yeah, I don't see that as being useful.
Although I do sympathize with you. I get nauseous during a lot of first-person shooters as well. And I'm actually working with one of our magazines here at Future is called Pregnancy. And obviously, pregnant women get nauseous all the time. So they're always looking at different, nausea remedies. And I've been talking to them and then finding out what they use for nausea. And one thing that I knew before to do is I chew on ginger. And when I'm playing, and it really does work. It helps me when I'm playing, and it also helps if the nausea already kind of hit, and it helps it go away faster. But now I'm using these weird aromatherapy sticks and all whatnot. But anyway, I'm recording everything that works, and we'll report it either in the magazine or on the web as soon as I have, a few things that I know work. But I do sympathize.
Now, if you get nauseous playing the game, wouldn't you get just as nauseous watching it?
I don't think so.
Because I have a friend that got nauseous just watching me play a shooter.
That's possible, but it is something, I don't know what triggers it, because it's not frame rate. I think this happens to Kristen sometimes too. It's not the frame rate, it's just some games do it and some games don't. You have no way of predicting.
Part of it might be the viewing angle, like the perspective. Mm-hmm. I know that throws some people off. Mm-hmm.
I want to.
It's a mystery.
I want to bring up with this guy's question is that the two games that he picks out, Portal and BioShock, have really choice bits of writing that are kind of self-referential to playing a game. So I think you definitely have to play them to kind of get those little bits, and those are fantastic.
Right, hey, I don't know if BioShock is as self-referential to it being a game. I think that would be just as effective, it being a movie. Although,
well, what about all the
twist in BioShock? Yes,
spoiler alert.
I'm not going to talk about it here, but yeah. the twist does involve like your actions, but it would work almost as well.
Your Kaiser Soze.
it would work almost as well if it was a movie and not because the way the actions play out, it's linear. So
yeah,
you will be nauseous from the awesomeness as well.
Yeah,
I do want to. I'm going to push. I mean, I don't know. You probably already play adventure games if you're not into first person shooters. But a couple that I think have spectacular stories, great writing. One is Siberia 1 and Siberia 2. I believe Ubisoft published both of them. Fantastic games with a wonderful story and obviously no first-person nuttiness. Another one would be Dreamfall. Not Dreamfall, The Longest Journey, which was the first story. Dreamfall was the second, not so great. But you can get The Longest Journey on Steam now, which is fantastic.
Funcom like did that one.
You're not going to plug...
it was all right.
You're not going to plug Indigo Prophecy?
You know what? That actually, there's kind
of a lot of weird first-person-y stuff.
Yeah, it gets kind of hairy, scary.
You know, on the strength of your endorsement, Logan, I downloaded that off Steam and I was trying it out. I was going through the tutorial, and there's a part in there where you're supposed to like jump out of the way of a car that's coming at you. It would not work. It said you can push the left arrow key or the 4 on the number pad or use the mouse. I tried every method; it just would not work.
Did you turn your keyboard the right side up, or did you turn it around maybe, or something like that?
That's the problem. My keyboard was upside down. Why did I not think of that?
You just see you hitting it with a banana. Whap, whap, I understand.
Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't,
I'll play with it more, but
or that, maybe try to rebind the key or something like that.
Yeah. Because like I got in this loop where it basically thought I was an idiot, where it's like, oh, didn't make it that time, try again.
It said, duh.
Yeah, and kept doing that about 10 times I tried it. It's like, didn't make it that time,
that's
try again.
That's frustrating.
Yeah, you won't be able to make it through
the
game.
It might also be one of those scenes that just has hair trigger timing.
Yeah.
They only give you a fraction of a second window, maybe.
I tried just hammering on the key. I tried everything. So
maybe it only wants you to do it once. I have to.
That was one of the things I tried. Yeah. Anyway.
But it is a good game with a good story. Weird story, but good.
Well, there's a lot of more really good questions here.
Let's keep going.
Yeah, let's get another one here.
Hey, PC Gamer, Cliff here from Anaheim, California. You guys are doing a fantastic job. I always look forward to listening to your podcast. Here is the question of the day. Will Fallout 3 make it in 2008? The reason I ask is because it seems like there's been a complete media blackout for the most part since that first video was released. You would think by now, so far in the development process, that they would have a lot more previews out, a lot more screenshots every week, just a lot more coverage, and I've just not seen it out there. So if you guys can comment on that, and if you guys have the status of it, that'd be even better. Take care.
As we far as leap we know, out everything we say from here.
as far as I know, it's still on track for Fall 08. It's and I don't think I would describe it as a media blackout. I mean, we've had. Right. We did a bit on it in our January issue with the top 8 games of 08 that was in there. We had an exclusive screenshot for that. We had our sister magazine OXM just did a cover story on it. They still haven't done anything hands on with it, but there have been a lot of stories. They've also been pretty active posting about it online and giving interviews. Todd Howard, I think just the other week we talked about how he was the producer. Todd Howard was talking about there being 200 possible endings for the game. So, yeah, and there's lots out there. You just gotta look for it a little bit, I guess.
Yeah, when we were talking
for
to
a question
him,
of the day, that was pretty weak.
What's that?
What?
He said it was the question of the day. That was not the question of the day.
Oh, no, I have the question of the day coming
up.
Oh,
okay.
But
we'll wait for
I was going to say Todd Howard did say they're on track for fall. So
yeah, which is kind of interesting because I guess initially they threw out the fall 08 date just because they wanted to be able to do the Fallout and then fade from Fallout, like the out part. They faded out and faded in 08. They just wanted to do that for the trailer. But you know, I guess it was, you know, it was a reasonable guess to begin with. But they weren't sure they were going to make that. But I guess it came together and they seemed to be on track.
My cat just vomited.
Oh.
Are there any bird parts in there?
No, she's an indoor cat. But anyway, here's the best question of the day.
Hi guys, this is DJ from Tampa. I first want to say that I love the podcast. My question for you is, the other night I had a dream where I went to a Valve-type theme park. I went on a Half-Life 2 ride, a roller coaster, and had my picture taken with GLaDOS from Portal. And my question is, how likely is this to ever happen in real life? Thanks, and bye.
That's actually not a dream.
May that 2010.
That is a prophecy, I believe, is what it's called.
What color is it? Is it indigo?
And you, sir, are a prophet.
You have the chroma.
Wow.
I don't think it's outside the realm of possibility that like Valve would team up with like Six Flags or Great America.
Universal Studios.
Yeah, or something
you're,
like
you're
that.
You're in this room and one of the Strider legs just goes punk right through the roof. Ah! And it spears somebody through the chest.
Yeah, there you go. But there's a lot of stuff in those games that would be well suited for it, just because it is kind of a roller coaster ride. You know, a first person shooter can be described as a roller coaster ride that takes you through, you know, the scripted events, just like similar to a roller coaster. So, I guess it just has to hit a certain threshold of popularity before somebody's willing to sink millions and millions of dollars into designing a theme park ride attraction around it.
And in order to get around the park, you have to go into those little pods, you know? Clunk. And all the kids will be separated from their parents. They're like, no, no, get in. Clunk. That was a question of the week, though. Thank you for sharing the dream. That couldn't have been easy.
All right, well, we should move on to playlists then. Logan, what are you playing?
Yes, finally, it came. It arrived. Assassin's Creed for the PC, the Director's Cut Edition.
What? Right?
Yes, what do you see here? What do you see here?
What? Let me take a look.
Go ahead, you can take the box because the disc is gone.
Oh, because I've already played the game. That's right.
Whatever. Yes, yeah, no, so this will be tonight, tomorrow, my weekend, pretty much every waking minute until I finish it.
Yeah, we just got a nice little care package from Ubisoft with a few copies of this. Norm didn't get a box one because he already has the review copy. But the rest of us will be enjoying this very soon.
Yeah, and this comes at perfect timing. I just wrapped up my second run through of Bioshock last night, so I'm ready.
Yeah, that's on my to-do list, the second run through of Bioshock with the updated they added a couple of Plasmids, yeah.
Yeah. I have to say, the second run through, I enjoyed the game just as much, but the combat,
yeah. Yeah.
The weapons still just feel not right, kind of.
Well, I mean, it depends. I mean, I guess they are a little bit weak. It depends, I guess, and that depends on which difficulty level you're playing through on.
Know what? I tried all different levels, and it didn't matter that much. It's more like the way people, they don't react to being shot that much. And
I mean, on the hard difficulty level, it's been referred to as the out of ammo mode because. Because the bad guys absorb more.
I just don't think it's not fun just to sit there with a machine gun and like unload, you know, magazine into somebody, right. And they're just, you know,
Right. I mean, it is a little bit, I mean, especially like the big daddies, they will make your weapons feel weak because they can take
but
so
yeah,
much.
But that I don't mind. It's like, you know, when you've got some chick in a party dress and, you know, you empty two magazines and she's just standing there going la 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 doing a little Joan Crawford bit, and it's just kind of weird.
Well, that might just be because you're a terrible shot, Logan.
It could be. I made an outline of her body and bullets around her, like in a cartoon.
Norm, what are you playing?
A lot of TF2. like my hands hurt because I played so much. and a whole lot of TF2.
Now, what's your specialization in TF2 these days? What map are you playing?
We actually tried some new maps. There are some, you know, user generated maps. There are some special maps for the online leagues and ladders. Most of them are okay. They're not perfectly balanced, but there's a new one called Redstone that we were trying out last night and 2 nights ago on our server, and it's amazing. It's almost, it feels like a Valve map. I think the guy who made it used to be a Valve contractor and did some level design work for them, so it feels really authentic. I mean, definitely lacks a little polish or so many items on the map. It's kind of cluttered, but it's refreshing and very fun.
And what's it called again?
Redstone. There's a beta version of it online, and if you jump on our server, which is at pcgmaxpc.nuclearfallout.net, it's on our server rotation, so you can download it there.
Sweet. I can't wait to play that. I haven't been on the server in a little while.
Yeah, you should definitely get on. Yeah.
Well, Andy, what have you been playing?
Well, that's the thing. I've been really busy. I have been playing Indigo Prophecy. I'm going through it really slow. I remember everybody was saying it's a short game, but it's taking me forever, apparently. But it's pretty fun. And I went to Video Games Live last weekend, which is
like
that big concert.
Like that.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about it. It's pretty awesome. PC games they played from were Civilization IV, which I thought was interesting. That's probably the only one that was PC only.
Well, it does have some, so like that opening music swell in Civ IV is pretty impressive.
Yeah, they had a choir and they had a dude singing in Latin probably. It was cool. It was a really awesome show.
What was your favorite piece of music from that?
Probably Zelda. Just hearing the symphony play the notable Zelda hit theme song is pretty awesome.
Did they really nail that 8-bit?
Well, yeah, but imagine a whole orchestra. Like, it's crazy. They make it a really fun time, too. Like the.
I saw Video Games Live perform in South Korea for the StarCraft II announcement. Their worldwide invitational thing. They were playing WoW music.
Oh, yeah, they had that too. I forgot to mention that.
Yeah. Which, I mean, I don't know. I liked it, but at the same time, it sounded an awful lot like what's in-game, because I guess that's probably recorded with an orchestra as well. And they didn't really, you know, like, make it their own at all. It was just, like, straight out of the game. It would have been nice to see them, you know, elaborate on it.
Add a little hip-hop.
Yeah, well, other than that, I mean, you know, it's always nice to hear, you know, music performed live, but, you know, some of the great things about going to a concert is seeing a band put an extra little twist on their songs, you know, that you don't get when you sit at home and listen to the CD.
Well, yeah, definitely. Agreed. But it's cool to be at the symphony with a bunch of nerds listening to video game music.
No argument here.
Yeah.
So, my, what have I been playing? I've been playing a lot of Sins of the Solar Empire, and we did neglect to discuss earlier that there has been a little tiny bits of news for the expansion that they're planning. There's going to be a campaign, which a lot of people keep clamoring for. Which I don't know. I don't really get the dire need for a single player campaign, considering the whole game is, you know, open ended like Civilization IV. You know, it's or Civilization in general. And you start with one colony, and then you branch out from there and make your own campaign. Really, it's just because, you know, some alien race isn't threatening to destroy you the whole way in a very scripted way. I don't know. I find a dynamic game to be really more appealing. But they're going to do that. They're going to have more playable races. They haven't said how many or what they are yet. It's looking very promising. Just I love to see more from those guys. I love that game. I was also playing with a mod on there last night, which enhances some of the visual effects. Norm, did you play with that at all?
No, I didn't get a chance to download it. I looked at the videos, though, and they look really amazing. I mean, the game looks great before, but it's kind of sterile. But with these new effects, at least what I saw in the videos, they're much more flashy, and the laser effects and the explosions, it's very cool.
I don't think it's really fair to call it sterile, but I guess...
Well, space is empty, you know.
Right, but I mean, they have all those crazy backdrops and everything. I think they did a good job of making the game, you know, out of the box look attractive, But these enhanced effects, you know, they put a little bit of extra colorful explosions and splashes into the weapon effects and everything. Let me see if I can find the name of that mod real quick. It is called Bale Knight's Graphical Mod. So if you go to the forums.sinsofsolarempire.com, you can find that mod, and it really makes really spruces things up a bit. I highly recommend it. In addition to that, I've been playing Company of Heroes. I busted out again, which I just always forget how great that game is.
For no reason, right? For no real reason.
For absolutely no reason. I always forget how great that game is. It's just the level of detail and the balance of it is just awesome. It took me a little while to get used to playing the British again because they're such a different side because their armor is weak, but they have really strong defenses. So I like forgot about that and was trying to fight tanks with British tanks and infantry, and that was not going well. So, but yeah, just brilliant game. Some CNC Wrath of Cain, or Cain's Wrath, sorry. Which
Wrath of Cain.
Cain.
Yeah. And the thing about that game is that they add so many new units that you basically have to relearn it from scratch. I mean, there are 9 sides now instead of 3 because they added 2 sub factions to each GDI, Nod, and Skryn. They added 2 sub factions to each of those, so they have like specialties. So it's really a new experience. But I will be writing that up in my review soon. So stay tuned for that.
Damn! It sounds like you've had some awesome gaming lately. I wish I could play that much.
Yeah, I wish I didn't have to stay up until 2 a.m. every night to do it, but...
It must be done.
Yeah, somebody's got to do it. All right, then. I've got to get back to, doing some work
We can bring you this luscious piece of magazine.
Right. We've got to get the work done so I can get back to playing some games at 2 a.m. So, with regards from myself, Logan Decker, Norman Chan, and Andy Bauman, we'll see all of you next week.
Next week. I should say, if you want to call in and give us some really good questions, because this week it was a notable week of awesome questions. We'd love to answer them. Sorry if we didn't get to them, but the phone number is 1-877-404-1337, extension 724, and we'll try and get your questions on the air.
And you can subscribe to PC Gamer at pcgamer.com/subscribe.
From your friends. Adios.
So let's see. We've also got a couple of game. Cut that.
You know what we could do is just play Assassin's Creed for an hour and ask everybody, do you know what game we're playing?